Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornel West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us slang, now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong, you act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
They done tore down all the PJs in my barrio. Gang units for worst case scenario. This might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodents still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still ride, still obliging. Still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Being forced to climb instead of how your back heavy, beat and lost your mind. Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone call cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs, selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug
America,
heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
You know the black freedom movement, constitutional, moral conscience. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation is trying to render us soulless, to wear our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the bus, same banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America,
ready for another exciting show with Dr. Mary Lee Live, emanating across the nation. I'm Dr. Tatum, coming from California. We got an exciting lineup, and those on the phone with us tonight, put your phones on mute. Somebody was just coughing, and we're going to have so many great things to talk about. We will be summarizing Saving Our Babies. The music you heard in the background was by Dr. Cornel West on Hidden Beach Records back in 2007. first rapper you heard was Iris The Moment, followed by Rod Digga, Black Thought, and of course, Dr. Cornel West. Music was produced by my oldest son, Corey Cote Tatum. And we have so many things we're going to talk about as we summarize Saving Our Babies. We've been on this for almost 4 weeks. We have a special guest tonight, a guy named Stan Tucker. They call him Stan the Man. He's an author. Kiana Poole, child psychologist intern. Jared McCourt, he was on last week. Alabama will give you a Southern perspective. And also Dr. Tynes. And before we get started, I want to bring on James Cannon. He's one of the co-hosts, and he is the father of entertainer Nick Cannon. And over the $1 billion outreach we're doing on H.R. 1242 for 100, if you look up H.R. 1242, we have a goal to raise $1 billion so we can get our story told across the nation. So without further ado, I want to bring on Mr. James Cannon, the father of entertainer Nick Cannon. Are you with us, Dr. Cannon?
Dr. Tatum, I'm here, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. You have the mic, Dr. Cannon.
Beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so excited, as always, to show up on Wednesday when I can to be able to add to all of the beautiful conversations that we have the opportunity to talk about. Serious conversations, ladies and gentlemen, but the beauty of being able to have a platform like this where we can share each week is that we can talk about real substance. You know, in order to be able to make a judgment about a subject, you have to look at the information, the research. You have to either do the research or look at the research, then come together with like-minded people that can discuss the research. And then after you can discuss the research that you had a chance to look at, then you get an opportunity to call for the question or the judgment. And a lot of times, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Lee, Dr. Tatum, a lot of times we make judgments about things when we don't have all the information. And so that's why this platform, Dr. Mary Lee, is so valuable week after week, so that we get an opportunity to be able to come and share, you know, really from our hearts, the things that we have to deal with, things that we're confronted with. And so I'm excited tonight, ladies and gentlemen, for a lot of reasons as we talk about saving our children. Because when we talk about saving our children, ladies and gentlemen, our children are perplexed right now. And we have many of them confused. We're talking about a depression and a recession. We've been in a recession, depression for 400 years. Our children go to school instead of getting knowledge in their brains. They put meth and PCP and stuff in their veins. And they're looking to us as the adults to shake this thing and make it make sense. And so forums like this is valuable when we take 2 or 3 weeks to talk about what do we do to save our babies. And we invite doctors and scholars to the table, and we invite our babies to the table on platforms like this week after week. I'm excited still about the privilege that we have to work along with the 400-year commission and talk about the greatness of Afro-American people in this country for 400 years. This show is 400 years of entrepreneurship in the Afro-American community. But we got to talk about our babies, because other ethnic groups are coming to this country and they're doing more with less. They're taking advantage of the opportunities. Dr. King said there's coming a time where the door of opportunities will open. But if we're not ready to even stagger through those doors, if we're too drunk, if we're moving too slow, too much bitterness to even stagger through the doors of opportunities, then we will see our children out on the streets in America with their hands out. And somebody has to make sense. And that's why we do a show, 400 years of entrepreneurship. That's why we want you to be able to connect and continue to connect to the work that Dr. Lee and that the team is doing to make sure that we can continue to come and communicate. It's vital, y'all, because when we really talk, we find out that somebody brought crack into our community to destroy our community.
It was a radio show. Yeah.
Well, when we take a look at the fact, we see that somebody brought meth into our community to destroy our community. Somebody brought gangster music and music into our community to tap into the minds of our young people. We got to look behind the veil to see what's going on, because our young people are confused, and they're willing to go to witchcraft and soothsayers and whatever they have to do in order to hear a word. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited tonight again to be able to just turn this show over to the host, Dr. Lee, and be a part of this, and to understand that none of us is good as all of us. We're in different cities across the nation, but your voice is valuable. And it's up to you to determine what you're going to do with it. And so we just want to be a spark, because a spark leads to a fire, and that fire leads to a flame. They say education is not just a spark, but it's a flame. It lights a torch. And so, ladies and gentlemen, again, I appreciate every bit of time that you come to this show, every ounce of wisdom that you give. We really appreciate it, and I'm saying let's keep it going. Dr. Lee, I appreciate you so much, your faithfulness, your strength, your wisdom, your sensitivity, your stick-it-to-itiveness to be able to stay with this out of your heart. And as we go to live video and let the world see who we are, I pray that God will bless that endeavor just like he's blessing this one. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, bring Dr. Lee to the microphone again tonight as we get into this subject of how do we save our children. Take notes, ladies and gentlemen, if you can. Come with some good questions so our children can understand. That's how people recognize your brilliancy, by the questions that you ask. So when we open up the line tonight, hit one on your phone and come with some brilliant questions so that you can continue with this flame that we're lighting tonight. Dr. Lee, I appreciate you so very much tonight.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon, and I certainly appreciate you. I thank you for your stick-to-itness as well, because this has certainly been a journey, but it's a journey that we will not end. And so I want to thank you. Thank you, Dr. Tatum. And I again, want to welcome you all. We welcome you. We're grateful that you're here with us tonight. As we go, as we summarize, we want to summarize saving our babies. I mean, we're not ending this, but this segment of it, we want to kind of wrap it up tonight with our medical team and with our co-hosts, our special guests. We certainly welcome you tonight. Mr. Stanley Tucker is with us. Stanley Tucker, also known as Stan the Man, has a mission to spread kindness through literacy with his nonprofit, Leap for Literacy. At a young age, Stanley experienced heartbreak when his beloved father tragically passed away. Stanley's late father was described as an ambitious and hardworking spirit who his son was fortunate enough to be able to feel. Although it was a short time, Stanley having such an impactful role model gave him the same thrill for life and to want to make a difference in others' lives. With that same drive, he is picking up where his father left off. With the continuous support of his teachers, uncles, and his community, Stanley strives to become an impactful part of the community himself by writing relatable and inspiring stories for children and teaching them the importance of connecting with others through kindness. With Stanley's drive and infectious message that the world is bound to love, he has successfully become an author. The book, Stan and the Man, tells of the strong bond that as a young boy he cherished with his father before his tragic passing. The story details how his enduring traits of his father helped him blossom into the fascinating man he has become. I want to welcome you, Stanley, and we want our co-host to also welcome Stanley. We will be hearing a little later about the full story, but I would like for you to say hello, Stanley, at this time.
Thank you, Doctor. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for that warm welcome, and it's an honor and a pleasure to be on this call with you all discussing how we can save our babies, and I'm excited to talk to you about the path that I'm taking to save our babies. So thank you for this opportunity to be here tonight, and thank you so much for the warm welcome.
You're absolutely welcome, and thank you for joining us. Trace McMillian, our co-host, we want to hear from you. We want you to say hello, just so we know you are here and your line is open. And at this time, I'm going to remind everyone else to please tap one on your phone. That will get your line open where you can speak, ask a question, or make a comment. Trace, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm back. I'm just blessed to be here, highly favored. I'm blessed to be around all you experts, and I understand and I know the importance of saving our youth and developing sound culture within our community. And so I'm blessed to be here to listen, learn, and give knowledge, insight, and information whenever it presents itself. So welcome, Mr. Stanley. Thank you for having me, Dr. Lee. And I'm looking forward to do it. I'm looking forward to this. God bless everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. We have also a guest from last week, Jared. Are you here? We'd like for you to chime in and know that you're welcome again, and we want to hear from you during this conversation tonight as we come. Hello?
Yes, Doctor. I am here. I am here. Roger that. It is a blessing to be on this line and on these calls with you wonderful people. I mean, I'm awe-inspired by the efforts, you know, and that drive to tackle these issues and discuss these issues. You know, it's so many times we just drive by and see these things happening, or we watch them through the lens of, like, satire and TV. And, you know, it's only when it really becomes real and we are pushed to confront them despite whatever sort of, you know, things we may be going through and whatever baggages and things that we carry. I think that those are the moments in life where we get close to really understanding a lot of that sacrifice that was made for our sake, right? Far too often we don't really have the ability to kind of put ourselves in that for our sake kind of potential. We speak about it, we hear it said, but when that emotion is really, really thick, it's hard to see that perspective. We just want the pains and things to stop rather than, you know, emulating or realizing that, you know, we're close to the greatness of our ancestors, to the people who came before us. And I, for one, have been on a mission throughout my entire life to try my best to understand that. You know, we're talking about trying to save these babies. Well, I think that we are a little limited in our ability to do that if we can't understand the ancestry or put ourselves in the place of, you know, knowing that these sacrifices can go somewhere if we just persevere, or even if we just understand. You know, so I'm grateful to be able to talk with you guys, and God bless you all for everything that you do. I pray that it continues, and thanks for hearing me.
And thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, we're going to go to our medical staff. We're here tonight. Dr. Tynes is not here at the moment, and we do want to remember his granddaughter, who had a medical challenge this past week. And so she's definitely yet in our prayers. At this time, we want to ask Dr. Moncrief, are you here? We would like to start the summary tonight with Dr. Moncrief. And you can just take all the time you need, and then we'll go to Dr. Long. Dr. Moncrief.
Good evening, and thank you for letting me participate in this in this dialogue over these past few weeks. Being a pediatrician may make people think that I'm an expert, but being a pediatrician and listening to the conversation that we've been having, it just makes me realize how little we know. We really, really, truly need to listen to what our young people are saying. We need to listen to what our children are saying. And our children are telling us what's wrong, but we're not hearing it. And because we're not hearing it, and I'm just talking about what we can do, we are not doing what we can do. When a young person gets on the radio and they tell us that, you know, they need things like something to do when they finish, get out of school for the day or on the weekend, we know that that's not anything new. We've known that we need things in our community for our young people to do for, I'd say, about 100 years or so. So what are we doing besides listening and hearing the same thing over and over? It's time for us to start taking care of us and not waiting for someone else to come in and save us. That's part of their message. The other thing is when our children make a mistake, you know, how do we deal with that? Do we come in and help them figure out why they made the mistake? Do we punish them for the mistake, or do we let the mistake slide? There's a lot of different elements or components in there. One young lady last week talked about the different types of love that she's experiencing or that she knows about. And it was very interesting that the type of love that she spent the most time talking about gave her back negative, if any, reinforcement. And then the other, and that was the love between her and her male partner. And she talked about it in terms of what the young ladies look for in the young men. And there was nothing, a very little positive that she was receiving back in these relationships, and yet that's the relationship that she was striving for. And the other type of love was very, very hard for her to define, so hard that that relationship existed outside of a personal male-female relationship, but she couldn't quite define what the love was that she was looking for outside of that relationship. So that was very interesting to me to see if we can get her and young people to actually verbalize what these different levels or what these different relationships are, what is a good relationship, what do they really truly want from those relationships, and maybe we can help in that capacity also. I just think this series has been so fascinating. We're bringing up different issues, different points that, yes, some of them we can't solve. Some problems we can't solve, but some of these things that these young people are bringing up, we can solve, we can address within our own communities. And so those are the things that I would like to see us focus on, and those are the things I'd like to see us get done. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Longs.
Thank you, Dr. Moncrief. Thank you, Dr. Lee. Hopefully everybody can hear me. I want to give a special prayer to close friend, Dr. Tynes, and family in their journey at this time. Saving our babies. I think this has been a great topic, and I'm sure we'll revisit it again. My name is Dr. Curtis Longs. I'm a psychiatrist, adult, child, adolescent, and I'd say mostly over the last 4 years, I've been doing mostly forensic psychiatry. Most of my time is spent in the Wayne County Juvenile Detention Facility in Detroit, and it is the largest adjudicated facility in the state of Michigan. And my encounters there are, I'll just say I look forward to the encounters, engaging young people with the things that they have to deal with on a daily basis. Going back to last week, the young lady who spoke regarding what's going on in Benton Harbor and the surrounding community, you know, it was interesting that this from last Wednesday to even this morning, it seems like I was faced with that type of dilemma with particularly young women every day. And in terms of staying with the theme of saving our babies, I've always concluded that we have to listen and we have to be non-judgmental and really there to aid when we can, but particularly, you know, the oath of medicine, do no harm. In terms of saving our kids, though, you know, I think looking at it from a lifespan, from pregnancy, infancy, early childhood, school age development, and adolescence is key, particularly adolescence when a lot of our young people tend to lose sight of who they are and become diffused in these numerous roles within the community. Which is a major problem. Today, I spent most of my time this morning apologizing to a young girl who yesterday I was finally able to take her off suicide gown and blanket orders, which means when a kid says they're going to kill themselves, it is my duty as a physician there to put them in a suicide gown with an accompanying blue blanket. And particularly with this young lady, she also had a what's called a one-to-one support staff such that there was no way she could possibly harm herself. So after being in the suicide gown and blanket for a week, and let me say also that this young lady's charges were related to robbery, violating her probationary order from the courts, and she's been going through this ordeal since I started there, which is back in 2018. So yesterday I finally was able to take her off this order, and she was very happy, and she kind of bogged me out saying, well, you know, I wasn't going to kill myself anyway, I was just playing. But last night when I got home, I got a call from the nurses and saying, well, this young lady just found out that her, quote, boyfriend, who was 19, had been in a shootout and thought to have been dead. So I knew I was going to have to see her again this morning because I had to reinstitute that suicide gown and blanket based on some other challenges she faces. Now, in terms of, again, sticking with the theme of saving our babies, confronting her this morning, because I really wanted to find out how she was doing. She told me, quote, I didn't sleep all night. I've been worried about him all night. I'm worried. And while in the presence of her therapist, I asked her, is she hearing what she's saying? She really didn't get it until I said, well, look, this whole hour I'm spending with you, you said nothing about yourself. Nothing. It's all about this young man who you've had previous dealings with, previous encounters in which you've been in a shootout, previous encounters in which you've been in a stolen car, and, of course, running away from home. The point I'm making is that in an attempt to, quote, save this young baby, am I her physician? Am I a psychiatrist? Am I a father figure? Am I a spiritual leader? In essence, I felt like I was all of that. And that's fine because that's what's needed with our kids. This young lady has very little self-esteem. And, of course, I tried to grant them calls to their parents. And when we called her mom, She couldn't communicate with her mom because her mom was in an active argument with her boyfriend. And, you know, I just sat there and said, wow, you know, do I need to put her in a suicide gown and blanket? Do I need to put her mom in a suicide gown and blanket? But I know, speaker said earlier, you know, our children and our communities will lack insight in terms of our origins, our historic history of survival is what's missing. Yes, this young lady, she is prescribed medications for her trauma, but in essence, the medications are going to do somewhat, some good, but in her case, like a lot of our children's cases, and then even in our own families, it does take a lot of patience and time to engage their stories, to be empathic, to be supportive, and to, in essence, act as a village in saving our babies. So that would be my opening statement tonight, and look forward to the conversation. Again, thank you, Dr. Lee, and my other panelists.
Thank you, Dr. Long. Sunday, there was a conversation about a 21-year-old girl who committed suicide this past Sunday. And do you know, or anyone here know, the circumstances surrounding, you know, that suicide? You know, I just felt that, of course, it's extremely sad. And, you know, we were, you know, talking, kind of sharing today, you know, about that situation. And we all conclude that we need to, you know, keep a closer check, you know, on our children. And, you know, we said that, you know, everyone's kind of in their own cyber world, you know, the parents and the kids, and that it's, you know, quite unhealthy. last week, yeah, we had a great show, and it was just so touching to have those children on and, you know, to talk about real life, you know, what they're dealing with. And, but yet we're still not acting out. I think I feel through their actions, but at the same time, you know, we hear, well, we need to listen. But then at the same time, there many are not really talking to us. You know, we're kind of out of sync with, you know, when it comes to really listening, and particularly the younger, you know, the younger generation or their parents, as you had stated earlier, you know, Dr. Longs, is that, you know, you were dealing with the mother, you know, the girl who was, you know, had to be treated for, you know, possible suicide, and the mother arguing with her boyfriend. And so, and not having the time to deal with her own daughter because she's dealing with her own boyfriend. And so we just have so many, many, many challenges. And one thing for certain, I do what I can do in order to, you know, to bridge this communication, you know, gap. You know, I feel earlier about the music, and our children are programmed and brainwashed, and we are too, basically, from the 400 years. So we're dealing with not knowing who we all are, and which certainly has a long-term effect. But at the same time, you know, our youth are very deep into social media, and some of us are really detached. And And you know, others make comment that the children have developed their own world and subculture, you know, via this social media. And so we have a real challenge, you know, with these communication barriers. And so it's and I'm going to ask you this, Dr. Longs, and I know because you're the psychologist here tonight that we have in communication. You know, as adults, you know, as the adults, what do we do? I mean, when we really cannot, there's no real communication at all. And after you, then I would like Trace, who is, I believe, the youngest one here tonight, to also comment. Dr. Long?
Dr. Lee, what I would say is that come to the conclusion that I have to use with my quote-unquote treatment plan is a lot of our history. And to implement that to our youth who don't realize that they are really inundated and distracted on a level in which, as Dr. Claude Young says, the dominant or the majority group in the states utilize media and control of the media, you know, to try to get them to understand what that means, it takes time. Now, that's just with the child, let alone the parents. Yesterday, in spending some time with a young man who's been what we call adjudicated for the fifth time because he took off his tether when he was only 2 months away from being done with all this, we got into discussion about video games, and he brought up, he said, well, Dr. Longs, I know you play, what's the car game where you, I can't think of the name of it, what, Andreas, it's a car driving game. And he said, well, I know have to know what that is. And I told him, I know, I've never played it. So we went on the internet and he showed it to me. And I said, well, what does it have to do with your charge of auto theft and, quote, you telling me you enjoy joyriding? So in my attempt to try to understand him and try to enlighten him, you know, yeah, we can say, well, you don't have a license, you don't have this, but I was really intrigued in terms of his use of the phrase joyriding and what it meant to him. And he just kept going back to this video game, very popular, and I just saw recently, I guess you can download it on your TV because it's very popular with adults as well. But, you know, I had to spend time with him to get an understanding of where he's coming from in terms of how the potential of getting in a car race with police, being pulled over, possibly being shot, is a joyride. I had to understand where he told me he grew up, that his dad is not in his life, and all the things that we've heard over and over. But unfortunately, contacting his mom, the urgency, and perhaps even her exhaustion in dealing with this young man, you know, I didn't hear from her what I would have thought I would expect to hear. So what we have to do is really take an approach of the entire family. I've had the unfortunate situations where I have to meet with parents after their loved one, their kid has killed themselves. And it's, from my perspective as a psychiatrist, you know, I know the signs and symptoms and related to depression, particularly with adults. But, you know, if you tell them, well, the signs and symptoms for a kid, you have to be really, really watchful in terms of their patterns. And usually the top three are kid comes home, said hello, doesn't say anything, goes upstairs. You ask them if they want to eat. No. Well, that's three already. You know, you've been called from home early from school because of being irritable. You come home, you're not interacting socially. You go upstairs, you've isolated yourself. And on a couple of occasions, parents have gone up to only find their kids hung. But then to counsel them and say, well, look, is there a family history of depression? Is there a family history of this, that, or whatever? These are the signs and symptoms for an adult because, of course, when adults are depressed, they don't want to go to work. They can't go to work. When adults are depressed, they may not eat. When adults are depressed, they're so depressed, they stay in bed all day. Kids will do the exact opposite or none of that. The only thing you may see with the child is irritability. And with that alone, you have to be more intuitive and really willing to seek out treatment. And I have to say that we as African Americans, and we're still way behind the eight ball as it relates to getting over the myths and all the other things that come with seeking behavioral services, mental health services, et cetera. So in conclusion, you know, what we have to be is more mindful, more insightful as to what these things are within our community, despite for sure acknowledging that our ability to survive and all the things we've survived over the last 400 years exists. But we get depressed as well.
Thank you. Trace, and then then Stan, we'd like to hear from you right after Trace.
Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Yeah. I've taken everything in, and I think I just came to the conclusion that I know exactly what he was talking about with, like, the video games and Grand Theft Auto and, you know, but I guess what came to my mind is just that keeping in mind what's at stake and what is the daily battle, being able to identify the issue and the problem. And what I realized is that within the black household, it could go anywhere from structure to, like you said, improper treatment, not taking a – we have a bad outlook on counseling and stuff, but the most important thing is that when you start a family, God willing, it's with a wife and you have your children, you have to really think about and remember that your wife and your kids come first. Their mental health, their physical, their spiritual, their to be able to prioritize and understand our children and why do they do the things they do and why do they like the things that they like. And if it's something that you haven't instilled into them, we have to get to the root cause of it. And you have to be able to monitor for as long as you can until they're good on their own, until they realize that, you know, I was taught better than this, but I still decide not to do it for whatever ill-gotten reason that they decide. But outside of that, a lot of it comes down to we have to have a refound history of pouring into our – it starts with our household. It starts with our children. So our youth, they get involved with other troubled youth or just people who aren't right for them spiritually, physically, or mentally simply because maybe they don't feel comfortable with their dad. They don't feel comfortable with their dad in the light of there being a two-parent household, of course. But, you know, like, you know, a lot of young black men are in fear of their father, not because their fathers are abusive or mean. It's just because the role of the black man has to be so strong and, you know, be alpha man based and, you know, be strong. There's so many stereotypes that go into just being a black man, but then being an active black father that when we think about it, we have to think about how it affects our young black boys. And so that's who they're modeling after, but we have to show them that it's okay for a father to son to say that they love each other. You can't, there's no such thing as being too mushy or too soft or too this way or that way if that's the model that's the young man that the father is modeling after. And so there's certain things that our youth would do just based off of how morally stable they are with their parents, just how comfortable they would be. Like, you know, I know some parents that say they wouldn't want their kid to talk to them about anything, but that's not something that a child is going to up and randomly do. They're not going to tell you about, hey, I like my first girl. Hey, I like my first boy. Hey, this is going on. Hey, that's going on. They could. You know, they easily could, but that's something that has to be practiced. So we have to practice within our household, our immediate household, and then we can branch out further. But we have to establish that relationship between parent and child. And then from there, the child has the new set mindset. So when they get away from their parents and they get into new atmospheres with other children, they'll naturally gravitate towards children who are raised up like the way they are raised up. And if they're not, and if the child is strong-minded, they'll be able to impact kids that, hey, you know, this is somebody that I want to model after, because everybody has an impact and influence, whether it be intentional or unintentional.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, and then there's sometimes kids shut down. You know, they'll shut down because they feel that we don't really care about them. And but we're going to go on to our special guest, Stan the Man. The floor is yours, and will you come to us in your own way? We're excited to hear about your books and your position on, you know, everything that's been said here tonight. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for the opportunity, and it's been great listening to all the perspectives and point of views. I can only speak from personal experience from my time being a second grade teacher in Metro Atlanta in a Title I school, and we had a very transient population. Most of our kids were either Hispanic or African American, and I came to the realization on how far our babies are behind in reading when my first year teaching, I did my guided reading lessons, and I had 5 different reading levels for that one class. I had kids on a kindergarten level, kids on a first grade reading level, kids on grade level, second grade, and then kids that were on a fourth and fifth grade level. And there's a problem with that. The problem is that, you know, the kids who are behind, what's their story? And I believe it starts in the home. It starts, like someone was saying earlier, it starts with us in the household, being that model for our kids. Guess what? If we're on our tablets, if we're on our cell phones, if we're on social media constantly, how do you expect your kid to pick up a book and read? There's a direct connection between illiteracy and us saving our babies, if we want to save our babies. I just want to read some statistics to you. Poverty is one of the direct connections. Of adults with the lowest literacy levels, 43% live in poverty, and 70% of adult welfare recipients have low literacy levels. Mass incarceration, I'm sure Dr. Longs, you can attest to this. Nearly 85% of juveniles who face trial in the juvenile court system are functionally illiterate, proving that there is a close relationship between illiteracy and crime. More than 60% of all inmates are functionally illiterate. This is a chilling quote from the U.S. Department of Justice. The link between academic failure and delinquency, violence, and crime is welded to reading failure. Powerful. Education. 1 in 6 children who were not reading proficiently in third grade do not graduate from high school on time, a rate 4 times greater than the proficient readers. Unemployment. Low literacy costs the U.S. at least $225 billion each year in non-productivity in the workforce, crime, and loss of tax revenue due to unemployment. And lastly, health. An excess of $230 billion a year in health care cost is linked between low adult literacy. So it's my belief that saving our babies start in the homes, getting these kids to fall in love with reading and writing. And because if the kids can interpret things and learn things on their own, they don't need anybody else to show them. They can go out and make a living. They can go out and be anything they want to be, because they're educated. They're not robbing and stealing and killing. And so I started Leap for Literacy in part to help with those. And so what we do, we have 3 initiatives. First initiative is book ownership. Our goal is to get books in the hands of kids who need them most, kids who don't have books in their household. They can earn books. And we do that by having the kids earn their books. And so what we're big on is showing the kids we don't care what you have, where you're from, who your parents are. You can't buy a book off our bookmobile with physical money. You have to buy those books off our bookmobile through acts of kindness, because we want to show them that it's important how you treat your brothers and your sisters. And so what's important to us is how you treat other people, and that's how you earn books. And so kids do an act of kindness every day for a month, and that's how they earn their books. Also, they have to read a certain amount of minutes as well. So that's how we focus on book ownership, is through our bookmobile. The next thing we focus on is book authorship. Literacy, if you know what the definition for that is, it's the ability to read and write, not just reading, but we want to focus on writing. So we focus on authorship. So we take kids through an 8-week course teaching them how to write their own book, how to tell their story, how to inspire others through their story, because out of the billions of people that's on this earth who've been before us and the ones will come after us, all of our stories are similar, and your story will be able to help someone else along the journey. So we take kids through this writing course, and at the end of it, we professionally illustrate some of those kids' books, and we turn them into entrepreneurs, because they get 100% of the royalties for the book sales. And the books are on Amazon, and they can sell them in hand as well. And in two and a half years, we've illustrated, and on a low budget, we've illustrated 40 books so far. And our goal is to do about 100 or more a year. So we're working up to that total. And then the last thing we focus on is book enjoyment. So I have a YouTube channel called Stories with Stan, where I go on and do read alouds to show kids the enjoyment that you can have with reading and the learning that takes place when you open a book. And so any kid across America can go on and watch that. And like my brother was saying earlier, it's very important that we model the way we want these kids to be, how we want them to grow up, what is really impacting our kids, and like Dr. Lee was saying, us as well, is the things that we hear, the things that we see. You know, these kids are hearing this music, and they're mimicking it, and this music is just made to keep you enslaved to this world of fashion and, you know, sex and all these things that our children shouldn't be seeing. And so I just started a children's show called The Very Airy Library, and that goal is to show kids the joy of literacy, but also to be that strong figure to show kids that you don't have to be a rapper, you don't have to be an athlete. You can be someone that's passionate about literacy and helping others, and still be able to have a platform that can be seen on hopefully TV one of these days. So I'm just doing my part in what I believe is the culprit for one of the culprits of us losing our babies, not at this young tender age, but losing them as they grow up. And it starts with literacy.
Oh my, that is absolutely wonderful. I mean, this is a major undertaking that you have taken up here, and just much, much, much needed. And so I do recall and you can, if you can expand on it, I hope you know about it. You know, this thing about the third grade, you know, people, you know, the kids, there was an initiative across the country for that supported projects and programs that, you know, to bring our children up to a reading level by the third grade. And it seems that what you're doing here absolutely fits into that project. And there was a significant amount of funding that is, you know, still there by the government, you know, that's offered by the government. Are you aware, or can you speak on, or even know how that got started?
I don't know about the funding that's out there, but that was one of the reasons why I wanted to teach second grade, was because of the statistics that show that if you're not on grade level, reading level by third grade, they're planning a jail cell for you. And that, mm-hmm. in my opinion, is one of the scariest things that one of the scariest statistics I've ever heard, because when you think about a third grader, they are babies. They're 8 and 9 years old, and if they're not on reading level by, you know, 8 or 9 years old, they're set up for failure. Their life is pretty much doomed, you know, unless, you know, and that's just a statistic, you know, you can beat that, but mm-hmm. statistics are real, and it's scary. And I wanted to try to combat that. And that's what my program is doing. We just kicked off a pre-K and kindergarten writing program. I live in Atlanta, and we kicked off our writing program with 815 pre-K and kindergarten students. So my goal is to catch them young, to instill this joy of reading and writing at a young age, and combat that, because it's a shame that we can lose our kids that young. I remember when I was in school, in middle school, and there was a guy who would always act out during reading class or doing literature. I mean, you know, it always happened around the time where we were doing popcorn reading, which is where the teacher would just call randomly on people to read aloud. And mm-hmm. I now realize that he couldn't read. He wasn't a reader, and he was embarrassed. And so he would act out so he could get kicked out of class because he couldn't read. And so that statistic definitely, you know, is real. You know, I think mm-hmm. kids want to be in school, but they're embarrassed because they can't read, and then they drop out, and then they're in jail, you know. So, it's real, and I know about it, and, you know, I know there's money out there, but I'm, you know, building my program. So when I do apply for these grants in the near future, hopefully it's a no-brainer for all of them. Mm-hmm. And anybody that's on the call, I'd love for you to go check out my show. It's called The Very Airy Library, The Very Airy Library, and we release a new episode every Thursday. And one of the things that we do on this show is that we feature kids who wrote books in our program. And so we try to give kids inspiration to write and tell their stories by saying, hey, you write your story, it could be published, and you could potentially be on our TV show, our children's show. And one of our first episodes was, it was a book written by a 6-year-old African-American boy, and he wrote about his favorite football player. And we got the book published, and he got an opportunity to get his – I took him to a game, and it's filmed on the episode. If you watch the third episode, we actually took him to a game, and his football player signed his book, his favorite football player. So what we're doing with the show is to show kids that their voice can be heard, no matter if you're 6, no matter if you're 16, you know, your voice carries weight and it can be heard, and your voice is needed. So
I am so happy you're here and sharing this. Would you go ahead and spell, you know, for our audience the Very Airy Show? Could you just go ahead and spell it for them?
Yeah, V-T-H-E, Very, V-E-R-Y, Airy, A-I-R-Y, Library, L-I-B-R-A-R-Y, The Very Airy Library.
All right. I know that our co-hosts are just ready to jump in here. So, Dr. Canna.
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me? Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope y'all been taking notes. Some incredible people on the show tonight, and we're so excited again. Man, Dr. Lee, you have so many powerful hitters as usual, you know, to the point where really we need to do a show individually with each one of these people. It's incredible that my brother has within his heart to be able to work with young people in kindergarten and beyond, you know, as we work with young men between 13 to 18, same principle, same thing. It works, ladies and gentlemen. You know, one of the things, you know, as we look at our school systems, as we look at solutions for what's going on with our young people, you know, what I notice is that, and this may help, that in our school systems, a lot of times we send our kids out to play, and they play kickball, dodgeball, where the Asian community, they got their kids lining up, learning structure, martial arts, katas, punching, the different areas of the body, the medulla, the cerebellum, the brain, where they have to know these things. I think maybe even in our education system in the kindergarten, if we really preparing our children to go in and learn and understand they're there for that, that would help. You know, and so I appreciate all the conversation as we deal with our young people. I have 5 sons. Nick Cannon is my oldest son. But in looking at what our young people are going through, the message is being sent to our young people through the music. And so we as parents have to critique that music. We have to teach our children the difference between garbage music and good music. We can't take music away from them. But we got to be able to say, son or daughter, let me listen to your music for a week and you listen to mine. So we're clear about what's being said to our kids, because in some of this new music like drill music, the reason, you know, a young man wants to have the police chase him down the road, because when he put that up on the internet, when he get away from the police and he run and get away and dodge and jump over fences and then he puts that on the internet and that goes viral and he put music to it, these record executives are going to give him millions of dollars because it went viral. Then he's going to have some instant money to get everything else he needs. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to pay attention to what our children are doing. And only because, just to add to the table, I've written a book, too, many years ago, Help My Son Has Lost His Mind, Thinks I'm His Enemy. What does a parent do when that peer pressure is so strong? You raise this child. You clothe this child. Fix breakfast food for him every day. Watch him go out the door to school. But somehow, they start listening to their knucklehead friends and think their friends know more than their mama and daddy that love them. The only thing you can say is my boy must have lost his mind. But what do you do, parents? What do you do? Get in a good martial arts class with your child. There's some incredible stuff that takes place in the martial arts class. You get in and with them. And you get your black belt with them. They're going to learn some structure, how to teach and how to grow. And some incredible things, those hours that you spend in a good martial arts class with a good instructor. I think that helps. Help My Son Has Lost His Mind, I talk about, we got to say love more. Some kids have never heard nobody say, I love you. And they go outside their door believing that Santa Claus brought them some toys because their mama and daddy told them that. And they go out the door deceived to a wicked world that they're not prepared for. I do think it is necessary to get our kids some counseling, but we may not have to pay for psychiatry counseling, because in some of our good churches, you know, I was that knucklehead young man. You check my record, ladies and gentlemen, that got kicked out of class every day, 7th and 8th grade, because I couldn't read. And like my brother said, I would rather you say James is bad than James can't read. But by the help of God, God showed me the steps to turn that thing around. So I know it can be turned around. And so like my mama said, people are not like apple and oranges. If you got a rotten apple, it's rotten. Rotten orange is rotten. But people can change. And sometimes we need good men that can pull these brothers aside. So secondly, as a solution, first get in a good martial arts class and get them young men in there with you. And get your black belt together. It's going to help you. Secondly, I would say start a show just like this and call the young men to the table, because some of the reason these young men do knucklehead things, we looked at a Will Smith do something, but we're not going to judge him or his family if there was his wife or whatever. But peer pressure, it could have been a friend, a brother, okay? Let's don't tear his family down. Let's understand that peer pressure, at the last moment, somebody's saying something to you, man, I wouldn't take that. I had a young boy that I was working with at 14, and he was telling his partners and his friends as I was driving and listening, and he said, if my girlfriend don't give me none tonight, I'm going to take it. And they said, yeah, man, yeah, and they nigging him on, you're nigging him on, and he was serious. I pulled the van over, and I looked that young 14-year-old boy in the face, and I said, young man, and if you take it, that's rape, and they got a jail cell for you. And I looked him straight in his eye. Some of our young men need real men looking them in the eye and say, listen, got to cut this foolishness out. Dr. Lee and the team, you know, I was tempted to do a show as well called Stop Hating Stupid Motherfuckers. And that's not my language. But I rolled up on a family whose son had just been shot in Temecula, California, and the young man that shot him four times, came back and shot him two times because he was trying to make sense of a conversation. So the young man went and got the gun. But when I rolled up on that that morning with a boy still in the street, the mother of that young man that was shot and killed with six bullets to his head looked into the camera and she said, you broke my heart, you stupid motherfucker. People said, Mr. Cannon, that's too strong. You can't use that type of language, Mr. Cannon. I said, but I felt what that mother felt. She didn't know me. I just rolled up that morning. I seen the cameras. I seen the crowd. But when I got close, those was the words I heard her say. So, yeah, we want our young people and save our babies, but we got to help our babies understand they got to help us with this task. They can't listen to drill music and then want to go drag somebody out the bed, shoot them in the head, and then put that up on a video and then think they're going to be applied. We can't join hands with murderers. And so we got to have shows like this one. A lot of us have never met each other face-to-face, but we do this every week. And so, therefore, let's do it some more. God said you've done a lot, but there's still more to do. All of us can do shows like this in our city. And like my brother, I commend you, my brother. Any way the Nick Cannon Foundation, what we're doing, can get involved with what you're doing with them young people, getting them literacy, we want to do that. And we appreciate you because we're marching in those same directives. And so I say get in a good martial arts class. Let's start some shows like this where we can call our young people to the table and we can talk to them and get some beautiful young girls to come to the table because then our sons will come to those shows too. If I got to construct the show to get my son to come to the show, and if there's going to be some intelligent young ladies going to be on that show, then I know my sons are coming, then I think that's just wise of me to do that because he may, like you said, he may not talk to me as his parent, but I got to hear what he's thinking. I got to understand it. So if I got to just be the silent listener, I gave my baby son Javen a show when he went to Howard University as a freshman. I said, son, interview all your new teachers, all your new friends, because I want to listen to them week after week to make sure that the stuff that they're sharing with you is wisdom. So get those shows up. Lastly, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you so much. Because I was that knucklehead young man gangbanging and cripping and doing knucklehead stuff in San Diego, California at 14, flunking out of school, I needed help. The help came through the church. There were good men in the church. I had to join the Baptist church and the Church of God in Christ. My teacher told me, 10th grade, you flunking out. You got four F's, two D's. You do this again, we putting you out. But I was hungry, y'all, and couldn't nobody speak to my needs. But when I got in the church, I found good men there. They didn't come get me. I had to take my crip rag off my head, and I had to walk up there to their church. And when he told me that, I'd already joined the Baptist church, but when my study habits were bad. And so when I said, listen, I'm going to go join the Church of God in Christ too because I need everything that I can get. Wasn't trying to impress nobody. I needed help, y'all. I faced death two or three times. I was that knucklehead kid. But what I'm saying is, so we got to recognize the edifices that our great, great,
grandparents built these churches, and we got to make sure they open up these doors, turn them into some studios so our young kids can come in there and do their music, do their stuff with good supervision so we can listen to the music. If these young kids understand that we're saying, man, you shot somebody, that's not acceptable. We've got to grab our own kids. The Asian kids are not doing it to each other. So we've been here too long, y'all. So beautiful. Those are my three solutions tonight. Get back in the church. Flood these churches. Make these pastors. What helped me when I went to them brotherhood meetings, there was some good. They weren't perfect brothers. I wasn't looking for their dirt. I wasn't looking for what women they sleeping with or who they. I wasn't looking for that. I was looking for them brothers to pour some wisdom into me because I'm getting ready to go do some knucklehead stuff. My partner spent 20, 30 years of their life locked up, all of them. But God blessed me to turn it around, get a degree, bless my son, touch this nation, and we ain't done yet, y'all. We want to continue to write some books. We're writing books too for young people, 13 to 18 young men. We want to hook in with you, sir. We believe in your vision. We want to take it to a whole nother level. Let's put a publishing company in every church. So those kids that you teach publishing, now they can reach out and become the publishers, where they can show the people how to get 1,000 sales over the internet. Put them in groups of five in every church across this nation, and they won't even see us coming. We have a network built with the most intelligent people on the planet, our young people. Dr. Tatum and Dr. Lee, and to our guests, and everybody's here, I appreciate it. We may not have to pay for psychiatry care for our young people if we flood the churches. We got good people in these churches, good wisdom. If it's 10 brothers over here that I know at brotherhood meeting, okay, and they got wisdom and they got knowledge, and I'm meeting with them every week because I'm going to that meeting. I may not need to go to a psychiatrist. I need to talk to somebody if I got a gun and I'm going to go pull somebody out the bed, shoot them in the head. I might not need a psychiatrist, but if they've got 10 brothers in every church, ladies and gentlemen, physician, heal thyself. I think we've got what we need. I appreciate it, Dr. Lee.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'd like for Stan, I'd like for you to respond before we go to Dr. Tatum. If you've got thoughts following Dr. Cannon's comments here.
Just to piggyback on everything he said, he's exactly right. We can't sugarcoat things anymore. You know, the industry, the music industry, the film industry are not sugarcoating things. So we really need to not just talk about it, be about it. You know, like you said, we take the lead. We're the ones who are showing them where they need to be, whether it's, you know, taking martial arts or picking up that book and reading it or writing your own book. That's the reason why I wrote my book about my father, was because I said, if I'm going to ask a kid to write a book, I'm going to have to do it myself. I want to model that for him. So I think everything Mr. Cannon, you said, is dead on, and I love to connect with you all and see how we can collaborate on some things. So love what you said.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Dr. Lee?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Dr. Lee?
Go ahead. Yes.
This is Dr. Moncrief. I just wanted to say that this concept of education and literacy is a pipeline piece. And our guests tonight are speaking at different points of the pipeline of literacy. And so I want to just add to it, there's a program called Reach Out to Read. Reach Out to Read. It's a national program. It's out of Boston. But it's a program where the doctors, the pediatricians, provide free books for children. I believe we started age 6 months to 5 or 6 years. I used to be the director of the program here in Detroit at Children's Hospital. And what we did was we had the residents who were training, doctors in training, when they saw patients, they gave the children books. Now, at that age, the children couldn't read, But the residents were to give the children age-appropriate books for the parents to read to the children.
Mm-hmm.
So that there was a bonding relationship between the parent and the child, and there was an attempt to address the issue of literacy and early intervention. What we mm-hmm. discovered, and not just in Detroit but across the country, was some of the parents couldn't read the books to the children. The parents didn't know how to read. And so with that, another component was created to the program where we did some literacy or some training trying to teach the parents to read. So what we were able to identify, and particularly in the younger parents, that they didn't get what they should have gotten out of school, and that was, mm-hmm. you know, being able to read basic level of reading, we were able to identify that and try to address that. We were able to give the children who were getting these books an opportunity to learn and maybe the word is not right, to love books, but to learn that there was information in books, that there were stories mm-hmm. in books. And so that would be a pipeline piece, an early intervention piece, where we can get mm-hmm. the parents involved and the children involved. When they get to the stages of starting the school, books aren't new to them. Also, we've identified in parents, particularly young parents, an intervention where they need to learn how to read and an opportunity for that to happen. And the last part of the pipeline piece, and it skips over a mm-hmm. lot of the pipeline, but the last part was you have residents, doctors in training who can do something besides take your temperature and know that you have a fever or listen to your heart. They're now understanding that there's a mental and an emotional component too that they should be addressing when it comes to their patient. So I just wanted to add that piece to the discussion.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Say something on that too, real quick.
We've got a couple more. We've got three more doctors on who do need to speak. But go ahead, Dr. Cannon, please. Thank you.
You know, beautiful. Just as a way of a solution, you know, having five sons, you know, one of the things that I found that worked, you know, because you want to make sure that your kids could read and their comprehension. Anytime we got in the car, I brought books to the car. You know, mm-hmm. and whoever rode in the passenger seat, they was the reader, and everybody in the car is listening. After the person reads, I would ask one of my other sons, did you understand? Well, explain what it was, explain what he just said. So you do want to make it fun. You want, you know, in my book, Help My Son Has Lost His Mind, you can get it from Amazon. The third chapter is how valuable reading is. So we write on target. The thing that I learned that worked for me is I can listen to my son's reading while I'm driving. I could comment. I could say, no, you used the wrong word. And I did build a love for them to read. They either had to bring books. If they didn't bring a book to the car, I'm bringing a book to the car. So I love coming to the car because my education went to a whole nother level because I'm listening to my sons read. So I'm saying if y'all get a chance, whether it's your nephew, nieces, get in the car, let them read a little bit. And things you cannot talk to them about for whatever reason, if any of those are in the chapter that you're reading, okay, and you're reading mm-hmm. it, then you can conversate about it. You wasn't able to talk about it. You didn't know how to bring it up. But if it's in the book here, read this book. We're going to get in the car and talk about it. Reading is elementary, y'all. Let's go back to that reading in the car with our children. I'm telling you, it works.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely does. I've seen it as well. But I want to ask Dr. Tatum to comment, but while Dr. Tatum is commenting, I want Dr. Crawford and Dr. Harper, please tap one on your phone so that we can open your line. So please tap one, otherwise we don't know where you are. Tap one on your phone And then we will open your lines, Dr. Crawford and Dr. Harper. Okay, Dr. Tatum. Dr. Tatum.
Dr. Tatum.
Yes, this is Dr. Tatum right here. How you doing? All I can tell you that this show has been so powerful, and I just know what Dr. Cannon is working and Dr. Lee is working on this national format. And I did mention in the beginning that we're working on raising $1 billion through H.R. 1242. And those that are in Los Angeles or California, James Cannon will be a guest speaker in Bakersfield in our city, the Change Community, 1660 S Street, 11 o'clock Sunday. Please come by and see him, 1660 S Street, Bakersfield, California. James Cannon will be a speaker. But keep doing what you're doing, Dr. Lee. And we just are proud of how God is bringing you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Dr. Crawford, all you need to do is tap one on your phone. Dr. Harper, we just need you to tap one on your phone, and then we can see you and open up your line. In the meantime, we'll ask Dr. Tynes to we yield the floor to you.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. My mindset is this today. Many don't know, but there was a 21-year-old patient I was seeing who I was trying to help, who was not in a bad way that outwardly, but inside was a more going on than they were willing to show. And then also just dealing with some youth recently, what I found is that from this show and from my efforts to try to save our babies, our infants, our children, our teens, that the consistent theme that I've found is communication. We all on this phone are in a different time zone, different generation than them. So we can't say that we're going to help them, tell them, mentor them, and what we're going to do. That's totally wrong. That's why it hasn't been successful. That's why we have all these youth deaths, everything like this. So that's a failure mindset. Made clear to us is that what we have to do is reestablish a bridge of communication, and we can't be doing it by our children, our past, because this is a different time. Time has moved on. The other thing was a communication gap and learning to hear them. And Dr. Longs, you know, kept emphasizing that we need to listen to them. We need to shut our mouths up, open our ears, and because otherwise when we open our mouth, we're just passing air out of our butts. So what we have to do is start listening to these children because they're dying. They're dying when they're being prosecuted as adults, when they're just young children or teens. They're dying in the hospitals. They're dying on delivery rooms. Our death count is so high, if you put those things together, that we have to stop pretending and playing that we got it made, that we're all right. If the whole race isn't all right, then we're not all right, and you are not all right. If what you have in your pocket is not what I have in my pocket, then neither one of us is all right. So we have to get that mindset. The major thing that I've got from all the youth, no matter what their age, is a commitment of time. We can't do this as a project. We can't pin it into our schedule and hit it maybe this month, and then we're going to try to follow up in a couple of months to see if we can touch base. We can't do it as a photo op. We can't do it as a selfie. The children have seen that we have not been there. They don't think we're going to be there. And we do have our misguided obligations. And the misguided obligations is that we are not pro-family, because pro-family means that all those children are our family, that we are the village. Even though whites want to use that phrase from us, that was our mentality. Dr. Claude Anderson taught us that brainwashing is taking a group and making them individuals. So it's diverse, taking a group and making them individuals so they focus on self, and then you provide them with little trinkets to make them feel better than the other ones. So, and now we can't afford the luxury. We have to bring our children in, because I've been scanning and looking at the different media outlets, what they've been showing, what black producers have been putting. All of it's negative. All of it's making us niggas. All of it's making us gangsters and thugs. And then, because I followed up on what the children had told us on the phone, so adults are doing that to the children to make money. Actors are playing these roles to make money. So we are worshiping the god of money. We are prostitutes to money, and our children are dying. So we have to listen to them, learn to understand their language so that we know what they're saying. And we do not need to give them a damn bit of advice until we understand what they're saying. So what I've only been successful in this Benton Harbor because I spent 2 years listening to the people, so I knew how they were saying it, what they were saying, and how that I could empower them to try to better them, not me coming in as a medical missionary or a missionary and going to save people and tell people what they need and what they want. That has failed all over the world, and that's why we're here in the United States. So to save our children, we have to first listen to our children. So to save our children, we have to first listen to our children. So to save our children, we have to first listen to our children. Then we can communicate based on their reality. Then we can communicate based on their reality, not our personal experience or what we feel they need to see, what they need to do, or what they need to understand. They don't need to understand nothing. They don't need to see what you see. What we need to do is to listen in their reality. And then once we listen and learn how to communicate, then a revealing will take place where then we can be able to help empower them with solutions that they make. Because as was pointed out by Dr. Bowles, that it was always the young people who led every movement and generation, not the older people. But we elders are for counsel. The young are for war. And we have to have this war against the death of our children, death of our infants, and the death of our teens. The last thing in terms of reading, we can't play it cheap because all of us adults, anyone who's on this phone who has been born within the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, 70 years, or 80 years old, all of us have been brainwashed. All of us have a little bit of white in us. And so, and we have, because we got a little house Negro in us, because we got a little coon in us, and a little Sambo in us, that we don't take it priority to make sure that everything our children read would be black, that it would be pro them, that they see the world through black eyes. And when you compromise or want to take, colorize it, then you've sold us out, then you have a mental illness called post-traumatic slave syndrome and post-traumatic slave disorder. No other race does that, but the sick race of the black race, the African race, the Negro race, whatever you call it, it's our sickness that have our children sick. So we must teach them that self-love, and we must be so pro-black. In other words, we must be unapologetically black. We must be unapologetically black. We must be unapologetically black. We must be unapologetically African. We must be unapologetically African. We must be unapologetically African, and we must be unshamefully pro-black. We must be unshamefully pro-black. We must be unshamefully pro-black. When you can do that with confidence and not have a mental issue with it and see your God and see Jesus as black, then you can make other people step back and you can save your children and won't compromise. Because we have not done anything on the congressional level and then the senatorial level and the House Representative level. We've done nothing on the county level, city level. We have not done it in the neighborhood level because we don't have black communities. Because a black community, a kid can go there and get educated. He can work there. He can train there. He doesn't need to leave it. He got a supermarket there. He got a laundromat there. He got a cleaner. He got everything that he needs. We don't have that because we go around chasing after demigods who look like they're from Iceland. He's chasing around demigods who carry around green paper we call money that we envy about, not bitcoins. So it's time to get serious to save our children and make sure when they read, the people look like them. Make sure when they look at something, the people look like them. I just told all my parents now that it's mandatory that they look at Black Panther with Chadwick Boseman, that they look at Akilah and the Bee, and that they now look at King Richards. That's when they want to have a break on the weekend, they just watch a show, it has to be that imagery. And that the first season of Bill Cosby, those are mandatory Black viewing. We got to clean out the poison in the gutter that's been put in our minds and in our heads. And we got to stop the killing of our self-image, our self-esteem, and our view of ourselves and the view of the world. Internationally, I just found out that we are looked at so badly currently, even with movies from Tyler Perry, that the Black producers are just emphasized gangsters and thugs and infidelity, adultery. We're getting killed on an international level and an international level. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you as well. Do we have Keanu Poole here tonight? Yes. Go ahead.
I wanted to just respond, real quickly. I appreciate my brother so much, and our views are so much alike in so many ways. But just reemphasizing, I've worked with young kids throughout this whole nation, some of the most intelligent young people. And I do agree, and my philosophy was none of us is good as all of us. But I think we need to work to bring our children to a point where they're teachable and they will listen to us. I do want to hear what's going on with young people because I got my ear to them. But a lot of the stuff they're saying is nonsense. Okay, and some of them need to listen. They cannot tell me they don't have to go to college. That makes no sense. I would say get in college and master that bad boy. Do it in the halftime and prove that you can do it instead of sitting on the couch and watching TV. Some of the stuff our young people are saying, we do want to listen to them. We want to set formats where we can hear them. But as adults, we often have to know that some of this stuff they're saying is nonsense. And we have to have a plan for the – it was a lot of good brothers that spoke into my life that if I would have listened, and it's a whole lot of brothers locked up in jail right now doing football stupid numbers in jail, say, 40, 30 years with no parole because they did not listen. They had good men in their life. Okay, and maybe we didn't know how to tell them to pull up your pants and come in here and let's talk. So maybe our skill is to find, because, there was a time when one of my sons swallowed some Tylenol and he thought it was candy. And I went in the room and I looked and he had swallowed the purple Tylenol and I panicked as a dad. And I took him to the toilet and I put my finger down his throat and I put some water in him and I called the doctor, I got to get this out. This is medicine, this is not candy. But what I was doing, because he was fighting me, he wasn't drinking the water, he was fighting me, but I'm trying to get the water down, then I slowed down and the Spirit of God talked to me and then I realized my approach was wrong. My boy had swallowed something that could mess up his liver, that could damage his life. I knew that. He thought it was candy. He swallowed it, not me. So I sat my son in front of me and I said, son, listen, that was not candy. I panicked. That's medicine, Tylenol. I got to get that out you, son. So I'm going to give you this water, you drink it. I'm going to give you some more water, you drink it. Give you some more water, you drink it. Then I'm going to take you to the toilet, put my finger down your throat, and that's coming up. It was only about 5 minutes. Probably I caught it in about 5 minutes. So he said, okay, Daddy. I handed him the glass. He drunk it. Handed him the glass. He drunk it. Took him to the toilet, put my finger down his throat. There go the purple Tylenol. My point was my approach was wrong. Okay? I panicked as dad. But once I got myself together and I realized, let me change my approach, now I got my sons working with me. Yes, we got to get these young people working with us. That peer pressure is so strong. They picking up guns, doing some knucklehead thing. Yeah, we need to listen to them, but they need to be teachable. Like I said, I had to purposely take my Crip stuff off and walk my black young butt up there to that church and sit down and listen. Because I was getting kicked out of class every day. My dad made sure I went, but I was getting kicked out of class. Just like you said, going off on the teacher because it's reading time, and she not going to call on me and make me look stupid. But when I got before the men that poured around me and began to share with me, And I begin to work with them. It worked, y'all. We've got some things in our communities we need to use. Let's establish some more of these shows. Let's us show up at them brotherhood meetings and them choir meetings and show those young brothers we here. Because that helps, y'all. We've got the solutions right in front of us. We just got to pick them up, y'all, and continue to use them even more. My point in this is, yeah, we got to listen to them. But we got to get them to a point where they can listen to us. That if you put a group of young people in front of a heart surgeon, if they ain't taking notes, if they ain't paying attention, if they can't stand up soon as that heart surgeon finished talking and they stand up and teach what he taught, a man told me, he said, young man, you got four F's. Do you know what that means? He said, that means you don't know a fucking thing about this subject. And it hurt my heart at 15. And I said, I got to get around some men that can teach me better. And so when we talk to our young men and when we don't back off on them and look them in the face and what you saying is stupid, young man. If you rape that young girl and if you take it tonight, they're going to throw you in jail. So yes, we do need to listen to our kids. We need to set the form where we listening. But we got to stand up like a good martial art instructor and said, you're doing it all wrong, young man. Let me show you how to do it because I'm trying to get you to a green belt. And if I can get you to a green belt, you can teach the yellow belt. And if I can get you to a green belt, I can get you to a black belt. And if I can teach you your body parts, you're going to be one of the a polished young man cannot be held back, whether he's black, white, Chinese, or Asian. Let's polish our, yeah, we want to be unapologetically black, but we Americans too. And in America, the home of the free, the land of the brave, let's get all the goods that we can get. Let's flood these colleges and come out magnum cum laude. If we ain't sending kids to law school every year, then let's start doing it. Pastor, give me 10 young men. We're going to wrap around them, send them to law school, come back in 6 years and litigate for the community. We got solutions. Booker T. Washington lastly wrote 10 books in slavery. Mary McLeod Bethune wrote 10 books, Born in Slavery. Dr. Martin Luther King wrote 10 books. We got Amazon, y'all. Let's write and write hard. Tell your story. Nothing over 100 pages. Make it motivational. Put that in a young man's hand and say, son, I put your pictures in the back so he can say, did you, daddy? And then let's continue. It's not the name of your first book, but it's the name of your second book because now you got a brand. We got tools. Let's listen to our kids, but let's get them ready that if you bring a president of a company before them, they know how to listen too. Appreciate it, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Lee.
Thank you. Thank you. It's Tiana Poole. Are you here, Tiana? Okay. Okay. So we are winding down. Yes, sir.
Dr. Lee, I'd like to kind of respond, but, you know, throw a little bit of a palate cleanser here.
Okay.
So I've been listening to what everyone is saying, and there's a few words that have just been repeating in my head, right?
Okay.
One is continuity. The other mm-hmm. is compassion, and the last is effigy, right? First off, God bless you, Stan, for what you're doing. That is, man, it's powerful. It moves me to the bottom of my heart, honestly. But I think a lot of this approach can somewhat be a little local, if I can say, right? We're looking out.
It's national.
To all of these. It is. And I'm not taking anything away from that. But when you have a strong foundation, you tend to grow with stability in these larger larger realms, right? Which is what I was kind of trying to get to there. I'm saying, like, if we take a personal approach to some things, then that personal approach can become someone else's personal approach, right? It tends to, you know, keep propagating as it goes on, right? The continuity aspect, I think, would start with a lot of people realizing that we have lost so much. So in a lot of ways, when we approach a lot of these situations, we're technically approaching them like children ourselves. If we can't analyze and understand and evaluate those things for ourselves, then how do we have trust in the message that we try to pass forward? Before a man can write a story, he has to understand that he can appreciate a story worth telling, right? If we can get to that point in so many different facets, we can inspire people to own those things of their own story. It was a question that I actually wanted to ask you, Stan, like, as an author, you know, trying to reach out to these kids and inspire them to read, what is one of your go-to methods to inspire them to appreciate the fact that they have a story to tell?
Yeah, it's really through their peers. I think I mentioned I kicked this program off August 23rd, 2019. 6 months later, COVID hit, and we had to turn. At the time, I thought it was a bad thing, but it was good for us in the sense we turned our program virtual. So now we have kids in 8 states that have their books illustrated. But when kids see that other kids just like them, their same age, that looks just like them, has their story written and illustrated, that inspires them right now. So I'm using the kids to be that inspiration for other kids. I just had a young man on my show, and his younger brother was there. And he saw the experience that his brother was having, and now his mom is signing him up for our writing program. So that's what I'm using. I'm using, you know, a lot of times, you know, we talked about how, you know, we need to be that role model. Us adults need to be the role model. But I feel that peer pressure, that peer mentoring that happens, you know, with kids their age is more powerful. And so that's how I'm using stories to inspire these young kids, is just kids that are the same age and looks just like them. And because we all have a story, and what I love what you said, we all got to figure out that our story is worth telling. And when other kids see that, hey, I have a favorite football player, or I have, you know, an amazing dad, you know, I can write my story too in its own way.
Amen. Amen. That to me says continuity. It also speaks to efficacy,
yeah.
Right? It speaks to...
Yeah.
What the young man said earlier, which is we have to be that example, and it's been echoed
yep.
repeatedly, right? Over the course of time, just bit by bit, like a thousand bee stings, we've been robbed of the ability to appreciate the legacy which we come from because it's filled with so much hurt, so much pain. Usually when the perspective we take when telling that story is we emphasize what sort of pain that was. Granted, that is a thing, but Dr. Cannon said something earlier, which is, or I'm sorry, it was Dr. Tynes who said, times have moved on, right? We tend to fail with accepting a sort of a contemporary continuity in our lives, right? We're not understanding that, you know, it doesn't have to be a burden to be those people who espouse the power of Black culture that has moved us through those hurtful things. We can't take those hurtful lessons and turn them into something that pushes forward to say there is a brighter day, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, there's hope yet to be found. You know, we tend to fail to foster what is a discovery out of fear, right? Like, how often are we promoting kids to things like follow that artistic line that you have in you? If you can draw, then sit and spend hours with it, own it. Make that a part of you, and don't be ashamed to share that with other people. I heard someone mention about, you know, the strength of Black men and us needing to be strong in order to set an example. That's not something to impugn, in my opinion,
In my opinion, that's something to be praised yet understood from multiple different perspectives, right? If you look at it for its negative connotations, for the idea that sometimes it goes overboard, then you're looking at it in a way of dismissing it immediately already. You're not understanding that every piece has a part to play in some grander tapestry. If we can't see that these little bits and pieces, though imperfect, are still woven into that same tapestry that tells that same story of us all generally, and we're not willing to submit ourselves to the concept of one for all and all for one, then we'll constantly be going back and forth with these nitpicky bits and pieces of arguments on opposite sides. If we can't stop being adversarial to ourselves, there's no way we can start being communal within our covens, no matter what coven that is. You'll always either view yourself as an outsider, or you'll view those other people who don't quite align to exactly what you want and what you expect to also be outsiders. It's the programming that we've gotten. If we want to look back at the way that we've been bamboozled and lied to and stolen, then we have to start with today. How is it that that moves you more than your desire to go out and say, I'm imperfect as a person. I'm a black man, but I have a philosophy. And that philosophy is something that I'd like to share with you. Even if it's just in a passing moment, I understand where you are, and I've thought about it this way. Here's my take. Here's my perspective. And then I'll go to the idea of relationships between men and women. We've allowed for women, though their pain has been great in the black community, to own sort of an anger. They have a visceral, you know, want to scream about the pains that they go through. But they miss one characteristic that Big Mama had, and she gave it to all of us. And that was her quiet understanding. She really didn't have to say much. She just had this soul-moving hum sometimes that would calm you down. It would put you in a place where you felt peace wash over you, because those were the things that she did for herself to calm her own soul during these hard times. She didn't feel the need to run to the mountaintop and say how angry and anguished and hurt she was all the time. However, comma, she also did something else. She was able to give us this ability to look at ourselves as individuals and accept our perfections and imperfections. She cheered for you when you succeeded, but she also was there to rub your back when you failed. If we can't get that from one another for whatever aspect it comes, then we are not accepting what that help and that motivation and that continued push is. We are all still children. If you look at 400 years, there's not a person who's lived long enough on this call to say that their numbers make them an adult in that. We're all children in the eyes of God. So if we are children, then we can have the compassion and the capacity to understand that that next person is not going to have it perfect. So we can stop with a lot of the judgment. Also, we need to stop with trying to box everything that we need to do as people into these convenient little snippets, these convenient little boundaries. We've been systemically hounded long enough. There is a holistic way that we can approach a lot of these things. But I think we tend to not see those things because we've been regimented into this idea of sociological boxes that work within a society, but we're not focusing on building our own society. We're focused on trying to take those methods and adapt them.
What's the holistic way of dealing with it? What are the holistic way of dealing with the problems?
Okay, so from what I would see is it's similar to what Dr. Cannon was saying, which is take that time to turn and talk to that young man. Take that time to be vulnerable in some way to help somebody through their hurts and their pain. When we're walking and we're talking and we're pulling those things into what is that tapestry, we tend to succeed more. They don't need a label. They don't need to be exalted, not all the time, but they still have their influence and effect. Those things in my mind go to the continuity of a black philosophy. We know the strengths that we have. We know the positivity that we've been able to give despite the hurts and the pains, right? But we've not found a way to quantify that in a communal way. We can quantify it individualistic. We shy away from sharing that communally. It is not wrong for a man, a father, and a son to tell each other that they love each other, right? It's not wrong for a man to show emotion. But that has to be reinforced in some way. And the most intimate way that that gets reinforced is in that relationship between a man and a woman when he allows himself to be vulnerable. And for a woman, she needs to understand that her compassion is not a weakness. It's not losing. That ability to turn a lot of those things into strength that helps other people grow, that nurturing nature, was a blessing from God, not a curse. This society has twisted so many things that we take to understand. And from generation to generation, the interpretation of what every different word means changes. And we're not keeping up with that. Yes, we need to listen to these children, but we also need to ground them in the original understanding of what some of these things meant. Like that young lady we spoke with last week. Her interpretation of what loyalty is was completely separate from the idea of a loyalty that would help you to grow. And Prince's distrust was really earned in a lot of ways. We earned that because we weren't there. But when we can allow him to break down those walls and know that that care is not fake, it's not false, it's consistent, constant, and doesn't come from one source, it can come from multiple sources, which is a stable community, we'll be better off, all of us. But we first need to accept that even though we're in this quote-unquote elder position, we're still children in a lot of walks. We need to share those, you know, those burdens with other people and have that return be something that's positive and affirmational.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate that. We're going to go to area code 619-7614. If you will let us know who you are, and you have the floor.
Yes. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. How are you doing tonight? My name is Shelley Mancion. I am the vice president of the Nick Cannon Foundation, coming in with Mr. James Cannon. Usually I, you know, used to have a conversation with him before coming on the air, but I decided to listen in tonight, and I thought that I'd probably come from more of a prodigal child rendition versus an inner city youth that has, you know, run through all the bells and whistles. I am a young lady at one point in time who did experience juvenile hall, that did experience music on the radio, that did experience a tummy tuck, which was amazing, which did experience pageantry. My children weren't just in private school for 1 year. They were in private school for 12 years, and the other was in private school for 13 years. I then again turned over and had more children. I had four more children after having the two. I was never bound on welfare. I was never bound on food stamps. I had my own hair shop. And like I said, I had music on the radio. Everything Nick was capable of doing, I was probably pretty much so capable of doing as well. But being a woman and being a mother, I felt it was more important to be there for my children. It gave me a lot of setbacks. It made me have to reel their father in and make him understand that this is not a one-person job, it's a two-person job. And therefore, a lot of the things in my first generation of children where they went to Mount Airy Christian Academy and things like that, it became quite different for my second set of children. So now we would say a 14-year-old is experiencing, you know, gun violence, metal detectors at school, coronavirus, you know, mental ailments and things that come with this new 2022 rendition of our youth. So it's a tad bit different. When I was growing up, like people would say, they pretty much stand around any store. If you stood around the store long enough, you were a part of the gang or their block. And then it could have started off as early as 9 and 8 years old. People were always recruited to the university of the mob or the university of the next gang or just something in a negative mannerism, because a lot of people, as we see in a lot of African-Americans that are incarcerated, were at one point in time deemed gifted or genius at an early age, at a stage where if the parent had an ingenial gene, they probably would have been able let's say it, because we all can probably say it together, but if the parent did have that ingenial gene, I'll make it very dumb and dumb it down. It's easy for you to sit there and play with blocks when you're a child, when you understand blocks. But when we start to get off into geometry, and we start getting off into trigonometry, and we start, when the child starts to ask, what college am I going to go to? You know, and the parent can't comprehend, therefore it's obvious that at an early age, the parent and the child are going to grow apart. In my case, no one in my house understood me. I said I was going to open up a hair shop. I opened up a hair shop at 12. There were a lot of things that I said I wanted to do. And so when Mr. Cannon came along, which is also my cousin, a relative of mine, he noticed that there was something about me that was a tad bit the same that he'd seen in his son at home. And we weren't just all over the place, but we were indefinitely bound to do something great. And no one was really had really tuned into that except for James. So when I go and I look at James' videos when he was young with Nick, they go back and forth. And Mr. Cannon, who was also a prodigal child and a gifted, that's my cousin. You know, James is smart. James came in and knew it all. So when he recognized that there was something going on with me, he said, it's not the child. It's more to it. So we tend to, when we have youth, we have them all in a program, and like you say, we make everybody come together as a group, but that's not how we came into this world. We came into the world alone, and the same little small, little tiny hole we all were bled out of is the same hole, unfortunately, we have to go back into. So it doesn't matter what I think of you or what you think of me. When we stand alone, we stand alone. People, kids need to be more focused on themselves as individuals. Sometimes we can get too caught up in the group, into the gang, into the gentleman with his hands out saying, here, you want to sell this, you can make a dollar, you know. So now children are getting off into bitcoins and roadblocks, and they're learning that they can just go online and make money. It's a whole new generation, a whole new slew of kids that have come behind us and in front of us and around us, and they're booming. We need to pay attention as parents. So I listen a lot of times to people speak, doctors, professors, and they're the highest rank, but they haven't outranked me. They haven't had their music on the radio at all. No one actually knows a lot of people. I sit and listen to this, and I said, it's a shame that you don't have a book, because I would read your book. It's a shame I can't turn you on YouTube. So when I hear Mr. Cannon speak sometimes, I say, James, can you bring these people to light? Bring them to life, because I would love for my children to sit and to listen, but they can't. They're unfortunately tone deaf when it comes to adult speaking. And so what I do is, if I hear something good, I'll run it back to the children, reading books in the car with my grandkids and things like that. And it is true to just break down the conversation tonight for me very quickly. It sounds like everybody has the youth in their favor. You guys have the gatekeepers, the gatekeepers of the children. Everybody's got their eyes on the prize, and it's the children. It's beyond black. It's beyond white. It's children. Because if I were to be sitting there feeding a group of black children, and there were to be a white child and an Asian child, and a Hispanic, you know, and all these, excuse me, and an Indian child would be standing to the side, and they'd say, please, I see you feeding your children. Could you feed me? I'm not going to deny those children because of their skin color. God made us all the same. So I can get into that, but I prefer not to. You guys have a good night.
Thank you so much. Thank you so very much. Okay, so we have, let's see, I believe that's Eric Oates, 313. Let's see, 313-0774. Your line is open. Okay, we are wrapping it up, and we're taking our last comments from everyone. And I'm yes, sir.
One thing I want to summarize for the person just is on the phone and others, which is so important,
yes.
Because even though she accomplished those things, even though Mr. Cannon accomplished those things, even though I accomplished the things I've done, that means being a professor in two internal medicine pediatrics, being an author for the Black Men Women of Tomorrow, but also publishing in medical journals, also being a public health director, working for the governor, all of this being traveled overseas. None of that means a damn thing if my children, which is every child that's being dying right now. We just had a young man found dead 2 days ago. If we have not moved as a race and we want to care about other races, then that means we have a mental illness, because were hypocritical. Charity, love starts at home and then goes abroad. You take care. You don't let your children go without food and then feed somebody else's child, and your children are starving. We have been taught that as a race through the enslavement of our people. So that exhibits lack of self-love. And so what I'm saying is that we have to love on our children. This is what I have learned. And what happened this year, by going in and being the trainer for the football team and keeping my mouth shut and trying to learn how these guys talk and what they saw, I was able to gently, subtly take a football team, and half of the football team became honor students, gently working with them. Then I even designed a T-shirt and created the concept A Square, Academic Athlete. And because of the fighting among adults that they saw in terms of the coaches and then the schools, I had to come up with the concept on the back of the T-shirt, one team, one family, unity equals a win. That's actually for us as a race right now, as a people, that we have to become one black team, not denying our African roots, becoming one family, and then becoming unified, not uniform, but unified, so that we can win this war that's against us that has started in the 70s. And if you have a personal achievement and the rest of a million people are still failing, that means we haven't achieved. But right now, that this is what I can give you that I've learned now from the youth. The youth is, there's three things that led me into the youth. One, which is very painful for me right now because I can't be there enough for all the kids, is being there. Number one is being there. Number two, listening. Number three, uplifting. So the things that I've been able to get in to the kids with the guns, and they tell me how to get the guns, the drugs, stuff like this to women, is by being there. Because by being there, they'll see me as a part of the environment, as a piece of furniture. And then the fact that they could say some stuff around me, could be negative, whatever, because they test you, that I'm listening, not responding. And then when I respond, I'm always uplifting. The young lady I call Princess, she had very, very low self-esteem, and she should have had babies some years ago in the neighborhood community that she was in, and that she got it at this later stage is an accomplishment in the situation, in that, but others may not see that, understand that. The brother Prince was headed for prison, and the fact now he's holding down a job and should have been arrested many, many times, but now he's on a different path. That was because of being there, listening, uplifting, and then comes the trusting. That's why I was able to get them to come on and talk by doing those things. And I'm just saying for us that we need to see if we can start doing this in our everyday lives and don't make it a Herculean task or something that's comfortable and just with one child at a time or that one environment. And I wish I had time to do my recreation center that I did, but, you know, fighting so many wars, fighting so many battles because the death toll is so high now, the elimination of blacks in medicine. We're less than 0.5% of doctors in the United States. Dropping off in lawyers, engineers, all of that. So we're not even paying attention to the war, that the historical black college has been degraded from historical black colleges to just a community college or ethnic, some new name they put down, which is removing those things. So I'm trying to say the urgency is here. Just start looking at the death toll of children in different age and the incarceration rate. Then you know, from the young man was good, that we have to change how we think to be able to save these children. We cannot go with our narrative. You cannot speak Japanese to someone who only speaks French. We got to realize that. We have to start to meet what we have in common. And what we have in common is that each one of us here could be there for somebody, be there for a child. that each one of us could fight with ourselves and listen. That each one of us could make sure that everything that come out of our mouth is positive and that we're speaking life to them. When you're criticizing, then you're speaking death into them. You're speaking negativity into them. So calling that okay. young man, Prince, young Prince, pulled up. He pulled up his pants. Calling that young lady, Princess, she started to fix up her hair and work on her hygiene by speaking positivity and life into them. Let's speak life, not death. Let's speak positivity, not negativity. Thank you.
That's right. Thank you so much. Okay, caller, air code is 313-0774. Your line is open, so you can speak. Let us know who you are. Are you there, caller? Okay, so we are wrapping it up, and we're going to just, we want only just if we can, everyone can just take a minute or no more than maybe a minute and a half to two to give your final thoughts. We will hear from Stan, will be our last comment. He'll be our last voice for tonight as our special guest. So we're just going to go down the line, Dr. Moncrief.
Yes, I think the conversation tonight has taken us to another level, another way of looking at this global program problem, how we're going to save our children. I think that the bottom line is we have to save our children. We have to take these different approaches. We have to look at how we're educating our kids and the pipeline piece, I think, is very important. Where our kids leak out, we need to get them back in. We need to talk about, and we didn't even address this, the fact that if our children are successful in taking algebra in the eighth grade, that they are more likely to go on and go to college as opposed to our children who are not successful in taking algebra in the eighth grade. They are more likely to go on and go and be incarcerated. So there are different things along the way that are giving us warning signs of where we need to intervene on the educational pipeline. And there's different things along the way that we can talk about where we need to intervene in our children when our children make mistakes, when our children make mistakes and they get caught making those mistakes. What do we do? We see what happens when they end up in Dr. Long's court. But what happens when they don't end up there, when they're still at home? What can we do? So there's different things that we need to take ownership of. And as the message was tonight, we still need to listen to our children and listen to what they're saying and see how we can help. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you as well. Dr. Long.
Hi. Again, thank you, Dr. Lee, and thank all the panel. For contributing. There is one question I had for Mr. Tucker in terms of his book program, and I applaud him for everything he's doing, and I agree, you know, getting our youth to read early is crucial, especially males and during the third grade part of their education. What I've tried to do downtown in this facility in terms of approaching their reading is to start where they are. And, you know, some people may find it somewhat controversial in that when they request reading, and to my perspective, is it doesn't matter where they are in their heads, whether they want to use ghetto fiction or urban fiction or whatever you call it. I actually let them start there with the goal that within 6 months or maybe a year, based on how long they're going to be down there, I can engage them to first go through a period of time, you know, going back in time, and looking at a James Baldwin on the Dick Cavett show as he's talking about racism and his book, I Am Not Your Nigga, and it brings them to the point where now they can put all their energies toward more appropriate reading. So I just wanted to get his thoughts in terms of what does he think, even though I know he deals with a much younger age group, but in terms of that method, in terms of engaging kids, which I still think we have to listen to where they are and start where they are, and they are willing, and I've seen that they're willing to come full circle and start reading things like from authors like James Baldwin, et cetera. So just to get his commentary, but I'm glad we were able to get through this portion of saving our babies, and we all know there's more work that has to be done.
Okay. Mr. Tucker, Stan Tucker, you want to respond?
Yeah, Dr. Long, you, in my opinion, you're going about it the right way. I think that's why there's been a big push here in the last few years, having representation that reflects our black and brown kids. And we have to understand that there's not a cookie cutter reader. Everyone has their likes and dislikes, and you gotta, for me, there's never a person or a kid that doesn't like to read. They just haven't found their book yet. And I think what you're doing is awesome, letting them find what they are interested in. And then that leads to other things. But first thing is getting their gaining their interest, and that's where you start. So love what you're doing. Definitely effective, and that's what we try to do as well with the younger kids.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Dr. Tynes, your final comment.
So I think this is terrific. The only thing I'm talking, my final comment is that we have to find what you have to realize is what you're doing by everyone here is that they're spending time in a situation with the youth, and that we have to. I'm getting ready to make this recommendation in the city of Benton Harbor, that I'm going to be asking everyone who's retired and on a fixed income who cannot work because it would mess up their pension or mess, not their pension, but their disability or whatever stipend that they get. Those individuals who can't work because it would mess up their SSI, that I'm going to ask them just to volunteer, not try to make some change, but volunteer now to have a presence in the recreation centers, the schools, or even open up some just to have a presence. That's what I'm going to ask. And then hopefully we're going to have some people who can't talk good, but some who may can. And then I'm going to ask them just to start listening. And then I'm going to tell them that they got to break a bad habit, because the Christian church is known to be bad mouthing when you get outside of the sanctuary. But you can praise the Lord inside of it, that we have to learn to do positive. And we need to criticize the media. We need to criticize TV shows. We need to criticize those things that are negative. We as adults are guilty when the movement came in, and right after the Young Boys Incorporated, when they used to wear the gold chains and nanny goats and all that stuff, and they switched over to the red, black, green medallion, what I saw was black adults go out and attack the kids and be telling them, man, you don't know what that red, black, and green stand for. But when they had the gold chains around their neck, they didn't say a damn thing. So instead of going to the positive, yo, man, you know, that's great that you're wearing that gold, that red, black, and green. Did you understand? You know, that's red is for the blood. It was shed because our people were being killed and they're still being killed. And then the green was for our land. And we're not a people who were born in test tubes, but we have a continent behind us. You know, black is for our skin, that we got that melanin in us, you know, the most beautiful substance in the universe, something like that. So I'm just saying that we got to change our mindsets. Dr. Longs has already said it. He's introduced that self-esteem piece down there. It rocks the world. The kids have very low self-esteem, but their imagery is coming from the media. And in my position, I'm seeing the numbers on a higher level, that I saw that we are actually disappearing in terms of census as a race here. We're also disappearing on the educational forefront. Because you see us doctors are black on this phone, that is not the reality for the rest of America. I'm trying to warn you. I'm the watchman of the world warning you of a crisis. The babies are dying. The mothers are dying. The children are dying. The teens are dying, being locked up. And we're disappearing because of systemic racism. And we're not talking about that or speaking about that. We're preparing our kids for that reality. So how we can save the children is that we have to look at the truth of what it is. We have to start looking at the truth, that we're still not considered three-fifths human beings, and trying to pretend that we want to do a voting, you know, talk about a voting right, okay, that we don't even have a Human Rights Act. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Dr. Tatum, then Dr. Cannon, and then Trace, and then to Stan Tucker. Dr. Tatum.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dr. Lee. Very thought-provoking conversation. Youth are our future, and I'm really invested because me and my wife have been married 44 years October, and we have 9 grandkids. Out of the 9, we have 8 boys. So I'm definitely on board for training our youth. I think what we need to keep in mind is that we're stewards that God has given us responsibility over these young people, and we must be great stewards and stewards that are accountable. So that being said, it is a great opportunity in America to change the trajectory of these young people, and we have the platform such as podcasts like this and other sources. So I just commend you guys for an outstanding show, and let's implement these ideas and take it to the next level.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Dr. Cannon.
Beautiful, ladies and gentlemen. So much I want to say. I know we're ending the show. I appreciate y'all so much. Dr. Tatum is such a powerful young man, ladies and gentlemen, that he's running for Senate in California out of Bakersfield. You got to know this young man. He's truly a John the Baptist going before this nation, keeping things intact, being a gadfly, knowing how to ask the question. We've got sights up, and you're going to hear a lot of noise from us as we make some noise, doing something that we're stepping out on some new wings, y'all, but we're expecting the help and the support of our people that say they love us, that's been around us. We're expecting y'all to do some radio shows and write some books to help us attack this task, because I believe in it and Dr. Tatum believes in it. I believe he's a good man, and the foundation that he's laying, I think we all can learn from it. But lastly, again, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you, and I think I want to emphasize the point. Get in a good martial arts class. It's going to help you, keep you in shape. There's a lot of good instructions that takes place in those classes, how to stretch, how to eat, how to take care of your body, self-defense. When your children see you doing that and you get your black belt, it's going to mean something. Get in and don't stop until you get your black belt, y'all. And then let's establish some of these shows, some radio shows, some Zoom shows, some documentaries that we're producing, that we're casting in our cities, in our churches. These little things help, y'all. And then again, let's don't forget about the edifice, the facilities that we have on every corner in our communities, the churches. Let's line up before the pastor, demand him to open up those doors 6-7 days a week. Tell him you got some programs you want to teach and that you want to pitch and you need some support. I guarantee you, because I did it. They're not going to come looking for you for your ideals, but if you got it well packaged, and you a polished young man, I'm telling you, they will pay attention to it. You know, to start a young man like Nick Cannon, the difference, he was a good listener. Once they become good listeners, then you can take them and you know that they're going to pay attention. A lot of times our kids want to talk all the time, and they want the adults. I talked to 14-year-old kids that told me they thought they knew more than me. Well, I say, young man, do you think you know more than me? My point is that our young kids are bright, they're intelligent, but they need guidance, they need mentorship. They need to first learn to be good, to be teachable. Because once I made sure my sons was teachable,
anybody could teach them then. And they say if you raise a child right by the seven years old, teach them to say thank you and please and yes, ma'am, and to pay attention and to ask good questions. There's a lot of entertainers, and regardless to what you think, ladies and gentlemen, that can mm-hmm. act and entertain, but very few have the ability to host and ask questions. Nick had to be trained, y'all, to be a good listener so he can ask questions. And he's doing it on a whole nother level. Pay attention to what he's doing on that level. Make your kids pay attention. Get their shows up. He has a class called Canon Class from Howard University. Let that be your template, y'all. I said, Nick, set your show up from Howard, from the library. Make them teachers at your school respect you. Show up and determine to be magnum cum laude with everything you got to do. Go in there and ace them tests, son, and then invite your teachers to your class, to your show, to your production from Howard. And it worked. He came back 2 weeks later and said, Dad, that show went viral already. What I'm saying is, ladies and gentlemen, we got the tools. Let's use them. If I give you a radio show in your city, well, you know what to talk about. If God gave you an empty building in your city free of charge, would you have a vision to know what to do with it, ladies and gentlemen? Only thing we need is motivation. We are humanitarians. We're concerned about everybody because God is. I'm emphasized on black people because I'm black, but I'm a humanitarian and I'm an American. So if I had a group of kids, white, Asian, Chinese, and black, I cannot show favoritism. I'm unapologetically black, but I got to let those children know that I'm fair and I'm just. Because the Hispanic people got issues. And I want my black children to understand the Hispanic history. I want the Asian kids to understand the Jewish history. So when we come together, I am apologetically who I am, a humanitarian born in America. I want the good from America that America owes me. Do we have a claim to Africa's goods if I was educated here?
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you so very much. Thank you. We're going to ask Jared. Thank you so much, Jared. And then Trace, so we are over time. Jared.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. I'll make it quick. I just hope that through all of this, we can see that sometimes perspective is a powerful thing. And in my mind and in my life, I've learned that perspective can work if you own it. There were times where I learned far more from watching an adult that I respected fail and recover than anything I ever learned from them while they stood from a position of exaltation telling me what was what, right? It allowed me to understand that, you know what, failure sometimes is a part of life. It's not what you endure, it's how you recover. My granddad told me when I was like 7 years old, we were cracking pecans on the porch, and he said, it ain't what a man go through in this life, it's how he come out on the other side. This is a man who survived World War II, had 8 kids, and walked to and from work with holes in his shoes. When he spoke and gave you something like that, you listened. So the only thing that I really want to get across is that the only value that they can take from us is that which we give them when we cage our own minds. You don't have to be a person who goes to college to succeed. You just have to be a person who can take that and turn it into an inspiration to do more. If you are a person who works with your hands and you don't understand algebra, you are not broken. You are not defective. You are just a person who's not been given that inspiration to use your God-given talents in a way that would be expositional. Thank you.
But can they learn algebra? If they were teachable, can they learn algebra?
Yeah, they can. Let's go on to Trace, please.
I'll keep it short and sweet as well. I know we're wrapping things up. I want to thank you, Dr. Mary Lee. I love and appreciate you and Dr. Cannon as well. All the doctors, all the elders. I saw you guys really made it rain tonight. And I'm soaked, man, so it's a lot for me to take in and dry off on.
especially being the young whippersnapper out the bunch. But I just want to thank you all personally. God bless you guys. We're going to keep this ball rolling and keep it going and keep making the impact. So God bless you guys. Have a safe one.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I do want to thank everyone tonight and, you know, all of our co-hosts and, you know, our friends and everyone who contributed, those who listened. You know, I love you all so very much. But I do want to give a special recognition or shout out to our doctor, because everything that we're talking about, everything that happens with our children, you know, when they go to the hospitals, the emergency rooms, or, and you know, the deaths, you know, they're on the front line. You know, they see this every single day. The pain, the hurt, the families. And I know that their hearts are bleeding, and we talk a lot about what's going on. So, you know, I know that I wouldn't be able to do it. So I honor you all, and I recognize what you're doing, and I want you to know that, you know, I appreciate it. You know, I personally appreciate it and say it on behalf of, you know, everyone, the families who suffer and hurt. And I know that you all have been there, and I know you're going to always be there, even through sickness, you know, even your own sickness, even your own families. You know, you're going through things too as well. So I want our, you know, I just want, you know, our family and friends and, you know, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you all to know we have some people here who are, they're working and providing out of the depths of their hearts and their souls and sacrificing families, their own families, to be there for everyone. And so I want you to know I appreciate you all. I love you. And now we're giving the floor to our special guest tonight, Stan. Thank you for joining us, Stan.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I just want to let everybody know that my cup is filled tonight with inspiration from all of you that are out there doing the same work and trying to save our babies. And definitely it has recharged my spirit. Just a great opportunity for me to share my story. And I just appreciate everybody listening and giving great ideas and just feedback and encouragement. It's been an honor. So thank you so much for all you do, and thank you for being on this mission with me to save our babies. Thank you all so much, and I hope you all have a great evening.
God bless you all. Thank you, panel. Thank you, staff. Thank you, co-host. Thank you, everyone. I love you all.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Came from the bottom, ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your war. But you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Couple of quirks, can't call it pancakes, cause you're poor some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland phenom. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gonna get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb instead of how you back, have you beat and lost your mind? Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.